Had the Waterbury women taken some legal advice, they could have discovered what Berry well knew, that under Connecticut law, many of them might well have found justice thanks to the more generous 5-year statute. It is to be noted, however, that the statute was 5 years only at the time of the discovery of radium poisoning. Following the emergence of the girls' cases, the law was rewritten in order to shorten it. With the good doctor's intervention, the company spent an average of $5,600 per affected woman, but this figure is skewed by a handful of high settlements. Most victims received less than this average. Some, insultingly, were offered only 2-digit sums, such as, in one shocking case, $43.75 for a woman's death. If one squinted at the situation and tried really hard, one could say that Flynn did the Waterbury girls a favour. He certainly saw it that way, intervening to save them the trouble of bringing a lawsuit. But the company and Flynn held all the cards, and Flynn hadn't finished with what Martlin called his double-dealing and two-faced shenanigans. For even though Flynn had now been forced to acknowledge the existence of radium poisoning, it didn't mean that all the girls who fell sick suffered from it. And so, as Flynn continued to run his tests on the Waterbury women, he continued to find no positive cases of radium poisoning. Not one. Not in 1925, not in 1926, not in 1927. Only in the fading months of 1928 would he concede, at last, that 5 girls might be affected. He told one worker, Catherine Moore, on 8 separate occasions that there was not a single trace of radium in her body. She later died from radium poisoning. Berry, hearing back from the commission, knowing nothing of Flynn's work at Waterbury, was completely stumped by the lack of evidence. But his new friend Alice Hamilton quickly realised what had gone on and filled him in. With the cases settled quietly by Flynn, of course there had been no evidence, no publicity, no Department of Labour knocking on the clock company's door, no lawyers involved at all. Just a tidy sum passed across a desk and a grateful recipient who took it. It was all hush hush. None of it helped Raymond Berry. From the beginning, Berry was very interested in Dr. Flynn. He had learned from the girls about his declarations of their good health, declarations that had confused them and for some girls taken the wind out of their sails when it came to filing suit. Berry thus decided, as early as August 1927, to dig a little deeper into Dr. Flynn. His inquiries soon unearthed a shocking piece of news. Dr. Flynn had been examining the girls, taking blood, reading their X-rays. He had been arranging medical treatment and writing to the women on the letter-headed paper of the College of Physicians and Surgeons. "I understood," said Grace's physician, Dr. McCaffrey, who'd arranged her examination with Flynn, that Dr. Flynn was an MD. But now, when Berry asked the authorities to look into exactly who Flynn was, he received the following letter from the New Jersey Board of Medical Examiners. "Our records do not show the issuance of a license to practice medicine and surgery, or any branch of medicine and surgery, to Frederick B. Flynn." Flynn was not a medical doctor. His degree was in philosophy. He was, as the Consumers League put it, a fraud of frauds. End of CD 6.